You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 32 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by our targeting coordinator, Andrea Longhi.
Hey, guys.
And Darth Boyardee, Marcel Manzano.
Destroying the rebellion, one omelet at a time.
Omelet?
Why not?
They don't do omelets, but Chef Boyardee is like shitty canned ravioli.
I'm not Chef Boyardee, I'm Darth Boyardee. We do breakfast too, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
So the plan today, guys, is we're going to be critiquing listener lists, and we're also going to tell everybody about the Michigan GT X-Wing events that are coming up, as well as just give a small Gen Con preview about what you should expect to see on the top tables. We're going to do a quick Patreon update. With the Jess Pava and Jakku Gunrunner reaching our patrons around the world, I figure we should talk about what we have coming up next. Or, as Darth Boyardee would say, cooking up next, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh God, I'm afraid of all the lame references that are imminent.
This is great. So we have a 3-card set coming. So all the ones, or most of the ones we've done before, are 2 cards. We're gonna give you guys a 3-card set, and it is inevitable,
almost
right?
A 4-card set.
Almost, right? But so many people, like every time I do a set, they're like, "Oh, you left out the Empire. Oh, you left out Scum." So now everybody gets their card. Right. So the 3 pilots are going to be Quick Draw, Lorik, and a double-sided Nim. And yes, you're going to get the Scum effect on one side and the Rebel effect on the other. And I'm really excited to see how these turned out. I've already given the preview to Marcel and Andrea. They've seen the art and for Lorik. That's the first one.
Yeah, Lorik one.
And it's going to be pretty cool. All right, guys. So I figured we'd take a second and just take a moment and talk about store championships, right? So, congratulations to Nate Moore, one of our guys, for winning the Red Raccoon store championship down in I think it's Champaign, right, Urbana, Illinois area.
Yeah, somewhere
southern,
south.
Somewhere south, and to our very own Marcel Manzano for winning the Pastimes, the official Gold Squadron Store Championship.
Woot woot!
Yeah, we couldn't let that one go somewhere else.
That's right. Like Lyle Sozin from the Scum and Villainy podcast had it for got to hold on to it for a year and a half. So now we brought it back home.
That's because I was working that night.
That's right.
Them's fighting words, Sozin. Better come back to Chicago.
That's right.
Unlock the hologram.
So we need to talk about Gen Con preparations. Now, we, unfortunately, none of us are going to be playing at Gen Con for different reasons. So Ron and Andrea are just going to be busy doing other things, seeing friends they haven't seen for a long time, just playing other games. Totally understandable. I unfortunately can't make it to any of the first flights, but I will be there on Saturday, and we will be streaming on our Twitch page. So that's twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. We'll be streaming day 2 and the top cut all the way to the end. Now, be mindful that we are attempting to use cellular internet inside of a convention center, so we'll do the best we can.
That might fail miserably, but if not,
right, exactly.
We'll record it.
Exactly. At minimum, we're recording, and little blips get out. And Marcel just had a little of a scheduling snafu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your North American champion will no longer be the North American champion and have no chance to do it again.
Yeah, so for those who aren't already friends of mine on Facebook, which it seems like almost half the X-Men community is, but for the other half. I got my dates mixed up, and I bought my ticket to go to Indianapolis and got the Gen Con passes. And then for some reason I thought it was this coming weekend, which will have already passed by the time this airs, which is the weekend of August 11th. So I made reservations to go to San Francisco with my daughter August 18th, thinking I'll go the week after Gen Con. No.
Nope.
Nope. So I will be missing Gen Con. And I'll talk about it when I get to the Scum, but obviously everybody knows what I would be flying, barring any FAQ in the next 2 weeks.
Right.
So I felt confident with it. Oh, well, I won't get a chance. But FAQ or no FAQ, I'm just going to put it out there. I will be at Nova, and I may lose horribly, but I'm going to make anybody I play lives miserable. Win or lose, you're going to have to work for it.
Yeah, you and I will both be at Nova. And that'll be a fun time. We're not streaming or anything there, but we'll keep everybody updated on the Facebook page. And it should be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about what lists should you expect to see. Now, there's, of course, always tons of different variations and what we'll call jank lists or things that aren't quote-unquote meta or competitive that you'll see. Like, people will bring those because they feel like it. We're mostly zeroing in on what are the most common and prevalent lists that you will see. We got Wave 11, which has driven some things away, and new things are coming to the front. Let's talk about Rebels first. So I think one of the most common lists that you're going to see is Kanan Biggs. It's sure. just... Yeah,
it's just so hard to beat.
Yeah.
It puts takes so out, much skill out of the game, and it takes so much. It's like a truck.
Yeah, it hits hard. It reduces a lot of damage and has a great final salvo with 10 dice if that need be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Then we have Miranda Nym, which is just bombs upon bombs.
Bomb.
Mm-hmm. Two rebel point fortresses, just holding on to as many points as you can and making sure you kill, you know, at least 50 points, basically. Or, you know, that's usually the minimum they have to do to win. You got Dash Miranda, which has a very, very similar idea. You got about a 48-point Miranda that you want to take to the end game, and Dash's job is just to pound as much face as possible. Then one of the newer archetypes that have come up, another one of the newer archetypes, is Fairship Rebel number 2. So this is anything with Biggs and Lorik and other pieces around it. It's really defensive. I played a variation of it at the store championship, and it's extremely good at dispersing damage. So having some answers for that would be a good idea. Marcel, take care of Scum.
Are we going through Scum, or are we talking about the actual Rebel lists, or how do you want
to
do this?
We're just touching on them. We don't have time to break them down right now because we got.
We've talked about a lot of this stuff on other casts. A lot of this isn't new, so.
Okay, so with the Scum, you still have the old Fenru, or variants of basically some type of mind linked Fen with some support, whether it's a stress support with the Lancer, or some other type of support with the Inaldra, the little thingamajiggy, and Ulterok, Inaldra. There you go. And you also have the Dengar Fen Inaldra, also mind linked. You have other variants of mind link. You have Dengar Nym, which is a bombing Nym, typically with the genius upgrade, so it can move and drop bombs after movement. Sometimes advanced sensor and engine upgrade as well, so it can reposition and either drop a bomb there or reposition, move, drop a bomb after. It's just basically bombs anywhere they want. And finally, I still believe you're going to get, even though I'm not going to be there, there's going to be other people with Jump Masters, because they're still solid and they're still good, and people still know they're good, especially against some of the other lists that you saw there with, you know, these one agility lists, these one agility builds like Miranda Nym and things like that. This List just eats them up with the intel agent and torpedoes.
Andrea, go ahead and take care of the Empire.
Yeah, sure. So we expect you'll probably see quad aggressors, so a quad TLT spam. First, because they're new and shiny still, but second, because quad TLT spam is just good. So it definitely can still be viable. You'll also probably see some kind of triple aces list, likely with quick draw, and then, you know, throw a defender or throw a Vader or throw an interceptor, you know, different things, but, you know, roughly a triple aces list. And then also we would expect you to probably see a Rack Kylo Decimator and an ace of some kind. So maybe Whisper or Quick Draw or anything like that. But just still using the Kylo condition to punch through and deal some crits and some nasty effects.
Yeah, so that's what I expect to see, to be at least make a really strong presence in the field. Of course, it's always cool to go back and see what we said and compare it to what actually happened. But yeah, we will see. Again, we are streaming from Gen Con to North American Championships. The date on that is editing. What's the date on Gen Con?
I don't know what the date of day two is.
Yeah, it starts the 18th. Day one is the 18th.
The 19th, okay. So yeah, we'll be recording on the 19th of August for day two and the cut.
Yep. And also, just a couple things that just want to add real quick before we jump off the subject is you're going to see a lot of cruise missiles, I think. And I'm going to go out there and say that Biggs will be in the final. One variant, a variant of it, and don't sleep on the Alpha Strike scum list as well. I know we didn't mention it, but like that Bossk hit hard list or some other type of very heavy hitting list, or even the Dengar Tell, you know, the Justin Fulas list is something like that. Might also make some impact. So just keep that in mind, that there will be, in my opinion, there's going to be two major type of lists. One list is the one that punches like Mike Tyson, and the other one is going to be the type that runs around like Mayweather, and you're either going to knock someone out or you're going to survive long enough to win on points. And I think that's going to be the story for Gen Con.
Excellent. Good lead-in. That's some good reporting right there.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
All right, guys, so we've gotten to the meat and potatoes of our episode today, and our main topic is breaking down listener lists. So we got a few lists here. We'll get through as many as we can. We had quite a few submissions. So I asked them for three things. I asked them for the squad, of course, what they were trying to accomplish with their list, and also matchups that they were having trouble with. Most people gave us the second thing and the first, but not so much the matchups, but we can kind of break that down ourselves. So Andrea, can you read us the first list? Who's it from?
It is from Matthew Budney. So he is running Whisper with Agent Callus, FCS, VI, and Advanced Cloaking Device. Lieutenant Kestel, which is one of the new TIE aggressors, with Adaptability, TLT, and Lightweight Frame. And then Double Edge, one of the other named TIE aggressors, with Adaptability, Unguided Rockets, TLT, and Lightweight Frame.
And what were his statement to us?
So we'll read this off. What I'm trying to accomplish is simple. I use Whisper as my main attacker and keep the two aggressors as flankers, using their TLT as much as possible to deal additional soft damage. I do not try to force the ability of Double Edge, but if it happens, it happens. It can be a boon. I tried to keep the two aggressors flying in formation on one side of the Phantom, but there are times when I will have one on each side. I try to force my opponent to commit to a target and punish them with the other. Auto thruster lists are always a problem, as they tend to go for the Phantom first, as they can last longer against the TLTs. Alpha Strike lists can also bring challenges, especially the PS9 Boss Nidru Fen cruise missile build. Surprisingly, after the first pass, when the Fairship Rebels 2.0 can't turn around, I'm pretty effective against them. Those are his comments.
So let's break this down a little bit. One of the first things I noticed, he's flying Whisper, and he's at 100 points. So, Matthew, we're talking to you, Matthew. You have no bid.
Yep.
That could be a problem.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For sure. Especially with, you're going through the effort of making him a 9. There's a ton of 9s that are relevant right now.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
And
here
also, not just 9s, there's a lot of 10s, especially with Nim. There's a lot of VI Nim. So there's a lot of 10 right now.
Yep, that's true.
Yep, so one of the best Whisper players that we know, Tyler Tippett, I was talking to him at our store championship this past weekend, and as you know, he was the hero of the Empire. He was the only person in the top 16 at Worlds to get into the top 16 playing Empire, and he had Rack Whisper. He brought Rack to our store championship, but he basically was telling me, he's like, yeah, you can't really play Whisper anymore. So, depends your meta, but let's assume you're keeping Whisper, okay? Let's say Whisper's still your girl. The first thing I would do is try to find some points to go down in a bid. I look at Double Edge, for instance, and right there, in your statement, you say, you know, you're basically, you're getting those TLTs off, and that's what your focus is for, and you're not really using Double Edge's ability all the time. So why not go down to an Onyx Squadron pilot who's also PS5, just like your Double Edge with adaptability, and that gets you 2 points right there.
Yeah, you could shave the unguided rockets at that point probably too, potentially.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's gone too.
So that's 4 points that you can mess around with there.
What were you saying, Marcel?
Truly having 3 points for a bid is not that's not necessarily a bad thing when you're flying Whisper.
No, you said when you were saying go down to something else.
Yeah, go down to the Onyx Squadron pilot. That's like the PS5
from
junior.
From Double Edge to okay.
Yeah, or I guess go up, because technically Double Edge is a 4.
Yeah, I guess,
but I'm thinking like a named dude down to a generic dude, but technically whatever, higher pilot skill. Yeah, sorry.
Yep.
Yeah,
you know what I meant.
Yeah,
or even down to the lower pilot skill. The other thing that I would put here, setting Whisper and Lieutenant Kessel aside, looking at the way you have Double Edge loaded out with adaptability. Think about adaptability as what you're likely to run up against. So if you are at a pilot skill 2 or 3, where you're expected to run into other generics that are popular at the moment at 2 and 3, adaptability might make sense, even though there's nothing, I think, 2 that takes adaptability. So we're only talking about 3 here. But then again, at that point, it really doesn't start becoming impactful again until you start getting into maybe pilot skill 6. Where you're starting to think, well, there's a couple 7s out there that you want to be able to shoot with or move before or after. Not before. That you might want to move after, like Dash. And then from there up, you know, it starts making sense at a little bit at 6, definitely at 7, 8, and 9. So when you're looking at an EPT that's a 0-pointer at this pilot skill 4, you're really looking at you're really looking at trick shot, and what's the other one, the
score to settle,
and with Double Edge specifically, I would even go with score to settle, because Double Edge's ability is shooting twice, so that soft focus becomes effective with the unguided rocket, and then it becomes effective again with the both TLT shots. So you're getting...
It can't work with the unguided rockets, because unguided rocket says you can only use focus to modify the dice.
I know, but even then, it still works in that you use your focus token for the unguided rocket, and after using your focus token for the unguided rocket, it still procs for both TLT shots. So you're still getting the opportunity to use it twice.
True.
And trick shot, of course, is another good one, because then you can hide him behind a rock, and start rolling four die attacks with rockets or TLTs, especially with the TLTs, because you get that, it's a turret. So that's just a little bit of thing. Pilot skill 4 adaptability is not very useful.
Yeah, maybe try, like Marcel said, a different EPT there, or, you know, suggest going to the generic, probably dropping the unguided rockets, and then that gives you some the opportunity to take an EPT that actually has a point value.
Well, the Onyx Squadron actually doesn't have an EPT.
Oh, then I lied.
Yeah, it doesn't have an EPT, but that's okay. Well, what it does give you some options with different crew for Whisper.
Sure.
So he has Agent Callus on there right now. You know, if you get those a couple extra points, you could go up to say something like a Rebel Captive, which is really good.
Yeah.
Especially
if he's saying that people go after Whisper first.
Mm-hmm. You know, and dealing stress is great because you make your opponent more predictable with their green moves, and you can start, if somebody has a Tani, you spread that out through the whole formation. So yeah, Matthew, that's kind of our breakdown of that one. Hope that helps, and let us know. Marcel, who's our next list from?
It's, oh God, you really going to do this to me?
What, the guy's name?
Okay, so it is, you know, I'm the worst person with name.
It's Crittenden.
All right, Crittenden. So it's Bill Crittenden.
That's, I like that even better.
Yeah, Crittenden. It's just like nice and quick, Crittenden.
So just start the whole thing over.
Crittenden, and he submitted a list that is actually a list that is a little bit, the ships are popular together, but he's got them loaded out in a completely different way. So he's got Omega Leader with Juke and Comm Relay, which you've seen before. He's got Quick Draw with the title, Fire Control System, and Lightweight Frame, which is not uncommon, but he's got a score to settle on it instead of what you typically see, which is Expertise in this build, with the third ship being Colonel Vessery, and by saving the 4 points on the score to settle instead of Expertise, he is getting an Ion Cannon and Ruthlessness, which I think in the current current Biggs Wing that we're playing right now, Ruthlessness is just it's a brilliant thing. If you can figure out a way to make assault missiles work, by the way, those are good too. They're just way too many points for not that good of a stuff. So let me go back and see what he said. And he said, the goal is to make life difficult for fair ship rebels. There you go. With ion control and getting some bonus damage from Ruthlessness that can't be spread around. Rex dies in 2 turns without actually shooting him. The ion control... Wait, why is that 2 turns? He's got 3 health.
So, Vessery gets to shoot twice?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, I get it.
Assuming as he hits both attacks.
Understood. So, Rex dies in 2 turns without actually shooting him. The ion control also helps against bombers. The drawback having such an expensive Vessery is that I'm stuck with a budget quick draw. Struggling against 2 ship lists, fat turrets. So I'm assuming he's talking about, I don't know, either Miranda Ray or something like that, that he's struggling against.
Yeah, I mean, any Falcon, any Dash build, any I mean, even Dengar. Miranda in my mind counts as a fat turret at this point, you know.
Yeah, or Dengar.
Yeah.
And his specific question is adaptability over a score to settle.
And that's my. Those are my notes. Those are my notes.
Oh. All right, so let's rewind.
So nice lead in there, Dion. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, before, Dion, you get into yours, I'll just say a little bit of mine. So those are your notes, all the bullet points?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, my take on this is I like it. I think the other one, the one that's more popular, that's been being played a lot more with the, I think it's TIE Defender has Veteran Instincts, Vessery with Veteran Instincts, and Quick Draw with Expertise. I think that was good up until Lauric came out, and now with Lauric and Rex being so popular, Ruthlessness is just a really good pitch, and so I like this a lot. I'm actually probably gonna, I'm not sure if I'm gonna play it with the other two ships that he has there, but definitely Ruthlessness with TIE D title just sounds like it would be good. Can you actually fit? You can fit two of them. Okay. Anyway, I'm just thinking to myself. You can fit two of the Pilot Skill 6 ones, right? With this, and then throw a third Defender in there with just Deck 7.
Maybe.
Anyway. Yeah, this is good. I think Dion had some notes in there about a score to settle, which I agree with, and he's going to tell you why here in a second. So take it away. I think you're going to say the same thing I am.
Yeah, so looking at that 0 point EPT, just like Marcel was talking about earlier in Matthew's list, Quick Draw is a PS9 right now. I think adaptability bumping up to PS10 would be a huge benefit, because you have that opportunity to possibly kill something at PS9 before it shoots.
And deal with the PS10 NIM.
And now, look at that. You took the words right out of my mouth. So,
and Whisper, and Intensity Vader, and
Fenrau, yeah, Fenrau, everything.
And there's a lot of PS9 stuff that you're better off moving and shooting, moving later, shooting first.
Exactly, and offensively, you have fire control system already, so the hope is that you have fire control system set up, and then you could just use a focus to modify the attack if need be. But I do understand the allure of a score to settle, because it does work on your normal shot and your revenge shot. But again, I think adaptability just has that little bit more value to be able to get you at PS10. Your fat turret struggles. I mean, I think the obvious piece is that you don't have auto thrusters anywhere in your list, so that's gonna hurt, and you might have to just decide how, like, maybe that's just a bad matchup for this list. I mean, it is. We know that, right? You said it's a bad matchup. You might just have to accept that it's a bad matchup. Maybe it's one of those where you only have a 40% chance of winning if everything's played perfectly, because if you just kind of look at the way your list is made, it's made for fighting against ships in formation. So you will always struggle against two ship lists. The only way you could not do that is basically completely change your strategy with Vessery.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you just changed, you took out the TIE D and you went X7 and started being more defensive, but then that basically changes your entire list. So, I mean, the only real change that I would make was bumping Quick Draw to PS10 with adaptability. And after that, I mean, I think there's not enough space you could really use in here. I guess the other thing you could do is maybe swap out Omega Leader for something else, but the target lock to set up Vessery is really strong, as well as being able to stop some of those modifications from Fairship Rebel when you're shooting bigs. So,
yeah, I feel like against Fairship Rebel, this would actually fare quite well.
Oh yeah, I would not want to see this across the table playing Fairship Rebel, not at all.
You know, I would think, especially for Gen Con, at least half the field is going to have some kind of a TLT factor, or it's going to be just a turreted ship. At least half.
So
I'm not sure that I would take that to Gen Con.
Well,
only because if that's your
this struggle. Is not necessarily a Gen Con list. This is just a list that he's playing.
That's fair.
So this is just, I don't know if you guys remember a few episodes back when I was talking about when I went to Ohio and I had Quick Draw, Backdraft, Riad on there. I talked about how I sacrificed Quick Draw on purpose at range one and then have people not shoot him purposely because they don't want to get shot with four die up front. Now, let me get his name first. Sorry about that, Bill. Okay, so Bill, when you're running into these problems with the dual turrets or just something, not dual turrets, just whatever it is that you're running into, if it's a really fat list with a Han, a Miranda, a whatever
cannon,
it is cannon, yeah, whatever it is that's causing you a lot of trouble, the tactic that I recommend or the strategy that I recommend is take your TIE SF, right, take Quick Draw and put them at range one as fast as possible on whatever ship is going to give you the most trouble at the end game. Let's say you're flying against Rey Miranda, put it in front of in this case actually whichever one, but Ray is probably going to put out more damage. So put it in front of Ray and put it at range 1. And then bring your other two ships at range 2 or 3. And then basically what you're trying to do is Ray will be in a position where he'll probably want to shoot, if you don't have a target lock on Omega Leader because it moved after Ray's VI or whatever. They're going to probably try to kill Omega Leader first, which is fine. What you got going for you here is you're going to shoot range one with Quick Draw. They're probably 80 plus percent of the time they're not going to shoot at Quick Draw. And even if they do, you're putting 8 dice into this 2 agility, well, 1 plus 1 agility ship. Now, the
That's
beautiful thing about
have,
what you got going on for you faith. Is you have Ruthlessness. Ruthlessness does not say against an enemy target. It says a range one ship, right?
We can double check the wording.
Yeah, so Ruthlessness.
Another ship at range one. So basically what you can do is you can hit your ion cannon on this big turret ship and choose to take that one extra point of damage on your own ship on Quick Draw. And then Quick Draw, even though they did not shoot at Quick Draw, will now be able to trigger its ability and shoot again. And then you get to shoot yet again with a TIE Defender and then do whatever you want to do with Ruthlessness from then on. So I don't know if you thought about that before. You didn't list it in your notes. But the ability to be able to trigger Quick Draw's ability by having them at range one of your target with Ruthlessness. So basically doing some auto damage and you're basically doing what that, what is it, the system slot that you take a damage to remove stress. You're basically doing that with Ruthlessness. So that might be a way to quickly put a ton of damage on an opponent's ship and take it off the board when you're dealing with his really big, nasty turrets. So anyway,
that's a great idea. I love that. I didn't think about that part. That was awesome. So using the Ruthlessness effect that's normally considered bad in a positive way in order to get that extra shot. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And it's electronic baffle. I was trying to think of it while you were talking about it.
Yeah, I know it was like some EPT that people use to commit suicide.
It's a system.
And I typically say don't do it, but in this particular list, if that's giving you trouble, and you can put 4 dice from your quick draw, then three dice from the Tide Defender, and then another three dice from the Tide Defender, and then another four dice from quick draw, and then two from Omega Leader, you're going to put a world of hurting on whoever it is that you're in front of.
Awesome. So, Bill, hopefully that helps out. Gave you a little bit more of a tactics update with your list. Hopefully that helps you out. Next one is from Dennis Daniels, and he sent us a Rebel list, and it is Kyle Katarn with Draw Their Fire, Ion Cannon Turret, Janor's Crew, the Moldy Crow title, and Pulse Ray Shield. He also has Lorik with Selflessness, Jyn Erso Crew, Kanan Jarrus Crew, and Experimental Interface. Then Biggs Darklighter, the all-powerful Biggs, with R5P9, Integrated Astromech, and that's it. And he's sitting at 99 points. So what Dennis is doing here, he's basically making a variant of the Fairship Rebels, but with a three-ship build. Kyle Katarn's ability, if you're not familiar, is at the start of the combat phase, you may assign one of your focus tokens to another friendly ship at range 1 to 3. So he is he's going to be stacking up those focus tokens with the Moldy Crow. In the beginning, he's going to nice and slow roll. And with Pulse Ray Shield, using Withdraw Their Fire, he'll take a crit off the shield and then just get it back. One forward to victory with that with the Hawk. And with being able to pass those focus tokens around and Jyn Erso being able to trigger. I don't know if you guys are catching this here, right? So most likely you move with Lorik, you do a Jyn Erso action, you would do reinforce first. You would then use experimental interface, take a stress to do Jyn Erso crew, because you can only do so you have to do it in that order. You can do card actions, and now you do that on Biggs. Biggs would get extra focuses depending on how many people he has in arc. And then since Janor's crew is not too far away, when somebody gets a focus token, they can get an evade. Is Janor's once per turn?
Yes, once per round.
Okay, once per round. So can't get double evade tokens. But then when you get to that combat phase, you can get Biggs even another focus token. Or you give that focus token to Lorik, who could now have modification for his attack. So he has a lot of really... This is a synergy build. It's yep. All about synergy. It's all working around. I had a couple of thoughts in my head, notes that I took down here. So you're sitting at 99 points. I do question why at 99. Maybe you're going for a bid against some of the other Fairship Rebels. That way you have your choice to move after the other Biggs and Lorixes that might be going around. But if that's not the reason, or if you feel you just kind of maximized it, I would say why not use R2-D2 on Biggs? Because you might be finding that... Because R5-P9 requires you to spend a focus. And yes, there is a good chance that you end up with unused focus at the end.
But it has to be on Biggs.
Right, it has to be on Biggs. But so, like, Biggs could take a focus action. Like, if he really wants to, he... Like, Biggs takes a focus action. Jyn Erso can give Biggs up to three focus tokens if you have three ships. So that's four. And then Kyle can give Biggs even another one. So that's five, potentially up to five focus tokens on Biggs. So, I mean, that could work. But I think the problem here is that when one of these ships dies, you're going to have synergy problems.
Yeah.
Because now if you start losing some of those focus tokens, R5P9 might not work as well. I think one of the big things that I see here is they think you're going to have a damage output issue. While you do have the extra tokens, it sounds like with the Pulse Ray Shield and slow rolling in the beginning and collecting those focus tokens with Kyle, you're not being real aggressive. You're not going to be doing a lot of target lock actions. I think you're really susceptible to target lock ordnance, jump masters, cruise missiles, I am really worried about Kyle Katarn because I think, you know, a couple cruise missiles and he just disappears.
Yeah.
Not so much because you got Lorik with selflessness.
That's true. Well, then what I would do is I would just target Lorik and just blow him out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Hawks just... They're not by any means tanky, even with your pulse ratio thing. They can go down pretty quickly in a giant ball of flames.
Yeah. So my take on this is you talked about R2-D2 over...
R5P9.
And I get R5P9 because basically Biggs is going to have multiple, a lot of focus tokens. So he's not limited to white maneuvers. I mean, to green maneuvers. He can do his whites and other things and still even do a K turn and with Kyle Katarn and Lorik still be able to recover a shield. So I'm not so angry about that. The 1 point bid, however, to me make no sense. If you got 1 point bid with this exact list, the upgrade from Ion to TLT is so drastic, it is worth way more than 1 point. So if this is the list that you like and you want to keep it, I would just make sure that you upgrade that Ion cannon to TLT and forget about the bid.
I mean, the damage output of a TLT is just off the charts compared to an ion cannon turret.
Not even. There's no comparison.
Yeah, I think the ion obviously can be strong against other Fairship Rebels, but it's going to be way weaker against literally everything else.
Yeah.
And that's... Excuse me, 1 second. That's the issue when you build something specifically to counter something like a Fairship Rebels. If that's the only thing you're targeting, you know, you still have to draw the matchup in a tournament. And if you don't, you have to make sure you have the tools to win those games. So swapping out for a TLT, for instance, helps with that damage output problem. I think that's probably the biggest, Marcel caught that biggest change there that we can make there with 99 points. I like the synergy, but like most synergy lists, once, I think Lorik is the, if anybody has target lock ordnance, we said already, he's the most obvious target. You try to wear him down, then Kyle, and probably end up with Biggs left at the end. Depending on how you offer it up, but yeah, I hope that helps, Dennis. Let's move on to our next person. Who is it, Andrea?
It is Steven Wagstaff. Hopefully I'm not mispronouncing that terribly. So Steven is flying. I'm pulling it up right now. He is flying Fen Rao with Atani, the Concord Dawn title, and thrusters. He is flying Palob Gadalhi, or as I call him, Pablo Hidalgo, because that's his secret name, with Atani Mind Link, Chikatro, Visago, Cloaking Device, and Pulse Ray Shield, and then a scout, contracted scout with Plasma, Extra Munitions, Cad Bane, Unhinged, Scavenger Crane, Adaptability, Countermeasures, and Prox Mines. Whew. Yeah, so his comment is that it's a relatively casual, sort of competitive list. The bombs are to help deal with the aces. The missiles are for the more tanky lists. Fen for Fen, and then the Hawk to support... and then be a permacloak. So the nerf will kill the list, but for now, it's a lot of fun. I've been having a good amount of success with it. So, I mean, my first inclination is holy lots of points on a contracted scout. that's really my first gut reaction to that. And I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure if it goes off, it is super successful having all that stuff on a contracted scout, but I just, if that if that's got to be your first target in that list, 100%, between the scavenger crane and all the stuff. I mean, if he just goes down really quickly, I don't know that Fen and Pablo can pull that out.
Especially, Pelob doesn't have any weapons at all.
Yeah, no. Looking at.
Yeah, like, the hawk is effectively doing nothing, except maybe generating a focus for Fenrao. I mean,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, probably.
So, I don't know.
Or something, yeah. So here's, you want to say something, Dion, first? Or
you go first. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm not, you obviously mentioned in your notes that the FAQ will probably kill this. So the FAQ, as listed in the spoiler, is saying 2 mind link per list. So you can get a 3rd mind link here, and it makes very little sense to not get that 3rd, that contract is got with a mind link. It's just free focus, so why not? That's number one. Number two, I like the extra munitions and the proximity mines. The plasma torpedoes, I'm not in love with because you don't have guidance ships. Especially in this particular case where you don't even have mind link to where you can target lock and focus at the same time. You can't target lock and then Pelob give you a focus later. So in this one, I would completely drop. This is what I would do to this list. To keep it fun and keep it doing what you want it to do, but just give you a couple extra tools and a couple extra options to really get more mileage out of it and really put some hurting on some people. So here you go. And this will be a free one. So you're at 98 points. Drop plasma torpedoes. Now you're at 95. Drop countermeasures because you don't need it. Replace countermeasures with experimental interface. So you're still at 95 points with experimental interface. Drop adaptability for mind link. Now you're at 96. So basically what you have is you have a contract at Scowl with 2 proximity mines. With mind link, so you get into free focus, experimental interface, which gives you an action that's not in your action bar for stress. So with Cad Bane and proximity mines at 96, right? Yeah, we said 96.
Mm-hmm.
So at 96 points, you can take your contracted scout and do any maneuver you want. And barrel roll as your action, and then use experimental interface to trigger your proximity mine and drop it where people would never expect you to get, because the barrel rolls on those contracted scouts are just so ridiculous. So now you've got basically you've got like the advanced slam type of range with your contracts as scouts to drop some proximity mines on people. And it will be painful. And you're still at 96 points. So you take those 2 extra points and you put an auto blaster turret on Pelob and you drive Pelob, you know, you keep your cloaking device far and then you drive Pelob to range 1 to steal that focus token and put some hurting on with that auto blaster turret. So now you've got Pelob with auto blaster turret loaded up the rest the same way that you have them now. You're still at 98 points. Your Fenrao is staying the same. Your contracted scout maybe isn't putting those plasma torpedoes, but the type of damage that you can put with those proximity mines and the kind of range that you get with those proximity mines are really going to do some. They're going to catch people off guard. Again, this is not a ultra competitive list. It's just the same fun kind of scum jank that will be even jankier than it was before, and it'll also win you a couple more matches, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And then a couple other things to kind of look in here. With the cloaking device, pulse ray shield, and Cicatro Visago, I think one of the things he's going for here is He could do the, like you said, permacloak and swap out the cloaking device for the feedback array and just feedback and then regen the shield over and over and over again if he wants to. That's one of his options there. I agree with everything Marcel says. And just to kind of build onto that, the reason why those plasma torpedoes just don't work, he's talked about the modifications. I mean, you're basically throwing four naked dice. That's it. And your average on four naked dice is only two hits. And there's a lot of hyper defensive ships out there. Dodging two hits is pretty easy, especially if it's only coming from that one ship. And it just, yeah, just getting those extra points to be able to get that experimental interface, it's just super awesome. When you have a chance, you know, do a two sloop and drop the bomb and in its spot, and then try the barrel of both sides and just see how much range you can cover with that. It's awesome.
Nuts. Yeah.
And if you, this is another idea if you want to throw it out there. If you want to be at, let's say you don't want the auto blaster turret, you could even just take the plasma torpedo and move it to Fenrau. That's something that people do for the matchups against Miranda. So you could potentially rip off all her shields in the opening engagement so she can't hit
do
you.
Miranda with, things.
Do Miranda things, yeah. So, yeah, I hope that helps, Steven. A lot of good stuff there. Let's see how we're doing on time. We're getting a little long. Let's do one more. Yeah.
Which one of the two you want me to do?
Let's do the next one. I think it'll be a fun one. Okay. Alrighty. So
make sure I got the right one here. It is the one with Wedge. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so ready?
Yep, go for it.
All right, so the last list we're going to go over today is submitted by Luke Cowand. I'll assume it's right. Luke mm-hmm. Cowand. And he submitted a list. By the way, Luke. Come on. Luke? Perfect name. All right. he submitted a list with that's a four-ship rebel, but not what you would expect. So he's got Wedge and Teles, which obviously takes the one agility away when he's shooting, with intensity and BB-8. So essentially he's setting his dial to green, getting a free focus or evade, and then he's got the integrated astromech. So he's putting a lot of hurt, and he's a high damage output ship at 9. And then he's got Wes Jansen with adaptability, so he can match 9 with Wedge, R3A2, and integrated astromech. So he's shooting first, clearing tokens for Wedge, and then stressing, and then letting Wedge put hurting on him. And then he's got Captain Rex with nothing on him, and Sabine with intensity, black market slicers, Sabine's masterpiece, and recon spec. So Sabine is moving with intensity. You know, she's doing her before movement barrel roll boost type of thing, and gets 2 focuses out of it, and then gets to move, and even black market slicer if she wants, if somebody is stressed because Wes Jensen is putting on some stress, and still have 2 focuses to basically flip intensity back around. Quick question here. With intensity and recon specialist, if you choose the evade, you can't really choose the evade. You have to choose 2 focuses, right?
No. So, because it's not a focus action, it is, intensity says that you assign a focus, so you wouldn't get 2 focus off of recon. I think the idea is to keep just, you would, intensity to get a,
evade
and then her action will be focus, and she'll get
end up with two focuses. And
so then she'd be able to focus evade to stay alive and have an extra token to be able to guarantee, like, basically flip intensity
first back. And then barrel roll, and then KC would probably intensity into double focus, and then I mean, this is super janky, super in my opinion non-competitive, but super fun.
If you read his notes there, you can go ahead and read his note, his thing that he put there.
All right, so let me see what this Luke the Force is saying. Competitive casual play, taking classic ships out and still being competitive, but with the main goal is to be fun. Sure, major meta list will melt it down, but I'm not looking to rewrite the meta here. And that's exactly, I would say, yes. I mean, I don't know. It's even as a casual play, it's probably like a mid-tier casual playlist, but it is a mid-tier casual list play that will be fun. Trying to keep two X-Wings and two TIE Fighters in some type of formation will be very tricky, especially when you have pre-movement barrel rolling happening from two of the four ships. So this will be a fun and very difficult list to keep together. There will be a lot of bumping. There will be a lot of running into rocks. There will be a lot of confusion, which will in turn lead into a whole lot of fun playing X-Wing. So for a regular league night, regular casual play, I love it. And I would not change anything on it.
So if I'm looking at this, the only thing, like, this does look, like you said, Marcel, it looks like a really fun list. It does look like it has a damage output problem, though, because Wedge will be able to deal some damage. Wes, probably. I mean, he has three dice. But Rex and Sabine are not going to do much damage-wise. I'm just kind of picking my brain here and seeing how we can get some. I think the idea
is just being cutesy of, like, Wes will pull the tokens to clear for Wedge and give them a stress, with that stress to being can trigger Black Market Slicer. I think that's the cutesy part here, to try and push through a little extra damage.
That's possible. I think, I want to try to tweak something for him. I mean, he asked for help. I think one thing you could do, maybe, I guess it doesn't really add. Let's see. You could, instead, if you want to swap out Captain Rex, and if you dropped, let's say you dropped Recon Specialist, because you can still get Focus Evade with Sabine, you could throw in what? You could throw in an A-Wing with Refit. I guess that's still two dice, but it's a better blocker at PS1. That's another way to stop some actions.
You're saying instead of Sabine?
Instead of Rex, you could get a PS1 blocker in there, which might have more value than his ability, because he has nothing to protect him, so he can die pretty quickly. And his ability doesn't work when shooting him. So
yeah, just a little idea. Just to go back to the Boyardee and boil something up here for him.
Okay.
So there's no changes. Sorry, there wasn't enough puns in there for Andrea today. Going back to the damage output, if we're really trying to beef this up and make it a little bit more, you know, give it a couple extra wins. An ultra tanky Sabian is fun, but if it's not putting out any damage, it's just fun for the sake of being fun. So 22 points is, you can do a lot with 22 points. So one of the things that you can do, for example, is you can swap it out for a regular X-Wing, a regular PS2 X-Wing with the R4-D6 and the integrated Astromech, which will come in at 22 points. We'll be shooting at 32 I mean, we'll be shooting at three die out of the front, and it will be mitigating some damage with the R4D6 in order to, you know, basically doing the big thing, taking stress to get rid of some damage, stay alive longer. Some of the other things that you can also do is put in some of the ships that are hardly ever thought about in a list, but I happen to love, which are the attack shuttles. We're talking about
That was my next thing to jump on. Go for it.
I mean, we're talking about three die ships with four hull, basically two shields, two hull, with the ability to do different things with a model blaster turret and things like that. I think Ezra, it just stays alive forever. If you can figure out a way to stress Ezra and just get those free modifications that Ezra gets, or even just do Zeb that comes in at 18 points with some type of crew and then an auto blaster turret. So now you've got a whole lot more damage. You're basically evading your crits before you get your damages in. You get an auto blaster turret in case you miss arc because of the low pilot skill, and you get three die primary. So there's 22.4 Sabine. As much fun as it looks, the way you have them listed out, there's just a lot more damage that you can do with that. Even going with just a basic B-wing might even be better than, you know, ultimately for the competitiveness of the list.
And then another idea here. Let's say he like just loves the Sabine ability. He's like, that is like the one thing he can't lose. If you drop Black Market Slicer tools and the recon specialist, you can toss in, that'll bring her down to 18 points. That gives you 18 points to play with. And sitting there, you can get a naked Zeb attack shuttle to have another three die ship in there. So that's just another
option.
Instead of, you remove Rex, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I hope that helps, Luke. And thank you, everybody who submitted lists. We will come back to them. We have a couple more here to do. So, and everybody who posted on Patreon, because that's where we put out the request, we will get you some type of answer here in the next week or so.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
All right, everybody, I am here with a special guest, and his name is Derek, how do I pronounce your last name?
Giuliano,
and he is the tournament organizer and judge for the Michigan GT 2017 coming up here in October 6th through the 8th, and he's running some Destiny and X-Wing events, and we brought him on here to talk up the event, and let's see, let's talk about it. How are you doing today, Derek?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on this, and I appreciate everything you're helping me out with here. Thank you very much.
No problem. So I want to start with, you know, how did you start playing X-Wing or Destiny? X-Wing came first, right? So how'd you get into X-Wing? Local store? Maybe you have a squadron name?
You know, it's kind of a weird and funny thing. Back in 2013, I went on vacation for Christmas to Boston with the family. My sister lives up there, and my sister got my dad a gift certificate to a local hole in the wall game shop in Boston.
Those are the best.
Yeah, exactly. And we go there, and he buys what he wants, and he's got like $25 left. He looks over at me, he's, "You want something?" And I'm looking over, and off in this corner, just sitting up on a little cubby, almost, it looks like, and I see Star Wars X-Wing. I was like, "What is this?" You know, I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, anyways. You know, and I loved the X-Wing game, so I look at it, I was like, well, this is just a bunch of miniatures. It looks like a looks like some sort of game. So I said, well, you know, I'll take that. You know, and it, obviously the core set at the time was $40. So I spent that $25, paid the rest in cash, brought it home. Didn't even open it up until February because I started looking at it. I was like, man, I don't want to open this up. You know, my wife, she's started kind of showing interest in games. Okay, sure. So February comes around. It's a really, really cold night in Michigan at that point. And I open it up and I look over at my wife and I said, you want to try this out? She's like, yeah, sure. And we started reading through the rules. Rules were really simple. So my wife didn't quite get it. She was like, she's competitive, but, you know, she rolls the dice and suddenly realizes, yeah, this really game isn't really for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So fast forward a couple months, I'm working out at an airport because I'm a flight instructor at the time, and I'm in between students, and I find this game shop that's right down the road. I go down to this game shop, and they've got this wall of just X-Wing, and I think it was they were on Wave 3 at the point. And I started talking to the owner of the shop about it. He's like, yeah, man, we got a great X-Wing car out here, you know, and it's a fantastic game. He started demoing it to me the proper way, and I immediately fell in love with it. And I walked out that day with about $200 worth of stuff.
Oh, mistakes were made.
Yeah, mistakes were made, and they have been made since. So I have loved the game since. My first big tournament win was a Wave 4 release tournament. And since then, it has just been completely mistake after mistake.
Wonderful mistakes, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So,
all right, Derek. So how did you get involved with the Michigan GT?
You know, that's again another funny question. I'd known about the Michigan GT. I used to be heavy into Warhammer 40K years ago, and then decided, wow, I put way too much money into this thing. I need to actually go out and maybe date people, and sold it all off. And met a couple guys a few years ago, and they started talking about the Michigan GT. And the guy who actually originally got me into X-Wing and made me spend that $250 of stuff at that store approached me last year and said, hey, we want to introduce X-Wing to the Michigan GT. Would you be interested in running the show? And honestly, I jumped on it. I love the idea of sitting back and just watching people play. We have such a fantastic community up here anyway. God knows I spend probably countless hours at night when everybody's asleep watching YouTube videos of people playing X-Wing. So what better way than to actually sit there and watch people play X-Wing? Because by doing this, I also learn more about the game.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that helps me later on in tournaments. So I jumped at the opportunity. It was a little late in the game. We only had about 2 months prior to the GT happening at that point for me to really drum up support for it. After everything was all said and done, I think we had 20 people show up for the Saturday event. We had 12 people show up for the Friday event, and only 6 people for the Sunday event. But for a first year showing, only advertising it for 2 months, you know, giving people about 2 months ahead of time, hey, everybody, let's go to Lansing and do it there. That wasn't too bad. So the organizers were actually pretty happy with how many people showed up at the time. So,
yeah, and you know, you got in contact with me and said, "Hey, let's get this out there. Let's reach out to the X-Wing community. I have a pretty good following in Illinois, kind of Midwest area.
Yeah,
and farther. I mean, we literally, except for Antarctica, we have listeners on every continent.
Really cool. You know, Antarctica, they got to have that X-Wing scene out there somehow, right?
Some penguin out there has got to start building it. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the specific events that you guys got going on. So you are running Destiny, correct?
That is correct. We're doing Destiny on Friday evening. It's going to be just your standard Swiss cut the top. We're starting at 7 p.m. on Friday night. The reason we're doing it that late at night is because I want to be able to, anybody who may get off work in the area that day or wants to come in and gets off work and local, that's more local, so give them more than enough time to come in, start the game. So we're starting at 7 p.m. We'll probably have four rounds of Swiss followed by a top cut for Destiny. Prize support is usually huge for all of our events. We do get official FFG prize support as well as whatever other prize support that the community as a whole will donate to the GT. And that's the only day we're running Destiny. Beyond that, we're running X-Wing all 3 days. The X-Wing event on Friday starts at 6 p.m. And it'll just be a standard three-round Swiss format, no cut top. It's just meant as a get-together. Let's have some fun. It's going to be a Hangar Bay event.
You know? I love Hangar Bay.
I love the idea behind it. I've never actually played in a Hangar Bay. I've always wanted to. But I started reading up on the format, and the format is fantastic. You know, you bring two lists. One it's got to be different faction each list, and you must play at least both lists once.
Yes.
During the entire thing. And then, obviously, whoever has brought the better lists will have won, maybe. Or maybe they brought two really, really bad lists but are just really, really good players. You know, seen that happen. But, you know, it's just designed for, it's like a small little get-together, you know, get people kind of rolling into the mode of X-Wing. And then on Saturday, we kick off the main event. The main event goes, you know, we're starting registration at 9 a.m. for people who just want to walk in. And then Skids Up at 10. It's going to be your standard store championship format for this day. So the hope and desire is we can get the entire championship day done that day. Mm-hmm. But depending on how many people we'll get, depends on how many Swiss rounds we go. So if we need to, we will cut to the top for the following day on Sunday.
Right. And it's the weekend that you guys have this planned. It is the Columbus Day week. Columbus Day is on Monday. So for some people, they might be able to hang out a day longer than they might. They need to.
Yeah, and that'd be fantastic. You know, we try to hold it on a weekend where it's not going to really interfere with anything else. Mm-hmm. So October 6th, 7th, and 8th, there's usually not anything that really goes on during that weekend. There's no big gaming conventions. Gen Con is over by then.
Yes.
that's the big one. You know, and that's really the key thing for us too. Last year was our first year doing Fantasy Flight stuff, and they donated prize support. And the manner of the alternate arts that were offered at Gen Con last year. So we got the, Omega Ace alt arts?
Yeah.
And those are, okay, sure, we got tons of those, but we also got the big alt arts, too.
Oh, the acrylic
really
ones?
Really nice acrylic ones.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. You know, ironically enough, the Steel Open actually also got those this year. So, because I ran the GT last year, and then I played in the Steel Open and was able to make it a top eight this past year, I actually ended up with two bigs. Acrylics, which is pretty hilarious.
You know, when the first one blows up, you get to use the second one.
Yeah, exactly. the hope and desire is if they follow that chain of events, is we will get the same thing this year. Whatever they're throwing at Gen Con, they'll throw at us as well.
Yeah, because they'll have extra for sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's always extra.
I'm sure there have probably hundreds of big alt arts sitting in some warehouse somewhere.
Lonely, ready to be loved.
Exactly. Everybody loves Biggs.
Some people.
Yeah. I love Biggs. I love Biggs.
All right, that's awesome. So on October 7th, you're going to crown your Michigan GT X-Wing champion.
Absolutely.
And then on Sunday, October 8th, you were telling me about a really cool narrative event that you got going on. Can you give us some more information about that?
Yeah, we call it Skywalker's Skull Crushers. The idea behind it is you have an alternate timeline in a completely fake universe where Luke Skywalker is injured at the Battle of Yavin, and, you know, even though he blew up the Death Star, he was injured, upset, whatever. He says, I'm done with this. Rebellion, go do what you want. Empire, go do what you want. I'm going to do what I want. So he ends up becoming a pirate. The event is very much inspired by the Steel Opens Merrick's Marauders. So you have Luke Skywalker. You can deck him out in any fashion that you want. It does not matter. R2-D2, R5-P8. You can stick just a standard R2 unit on him if you want. But however you want it. But you got to have Luke Skywalker. And then after that, you can have any ship from any other faction, as long as that ship is not a large base, is not turreted, and is not a unique pilot. You can only also have one of any ship type. So you can't have multiple TIE fighters. You can have Luke's X-Wing, you can have a TIE fighter, you can have a TIE interceptor, and a Z-95. I love the format personally. It's one of the most favorite things I've ever seen. I heard about it last year while I was watching the Steel Open stream last year. And then I saw it actually in play this year while I was over at the Steel Open. And I loved everything about it. So just some of the uniqueness that you saw brought to the table. People playing lists that they've never played before because nobody runs things like that. Mm-hmm. So the idea is get you out of your mold. Let's have some fun, you know, point ships and at each other and actually shoot each other instead of running around the board and shooting each other with turrets.
I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah. So am I. I love it. I wish I could see more of that around here, but you know, your standard 100 point dogfight format is pretty much what you see pretty much anywhere. So.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I really like about this is it has a really cool theme. I like the idea of, you know, the alternate universe of what happened to Luke Skywalker and his little gang. I like the fact that you're going back to what a lot of people consider the roots of X-Wing, which is your, you know, make sure you have arc ships. Yeah. And you point them in the right spot. And if you're better at that than your opponent, then you're going to do better.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, wave five really kind of brought in the big turrets.
Mm-hmm.
And it really changed the game fundamentally in how people play the game. And since then, you know, people complain about turrets, this and the other. I understand. Turrets have their place. Don't get me wrong. I don't like running big ships. And I am all about pointing my ship somewhere and then blowing somebody up. It's much more satisfying for me.
Absolutely. Awesome. So what? So let's say I wanna go to the Michigan GT. What are the events gonna cost me? How much are they each?
So the Friday events run $10 a piece. So Destiny will be $10. The Hangar Bay event will be $10. Unfortunately, you can't play in both events because they're both kind of rolling side by side with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, not every X-Wing player is a Destiny player. Not every Destiny player is an X-Wing player. Things like that. The Saturday and Sunday events, because they're considered our primary days, are $25 a piece.
That's not bad, honestly.
It really isn't when you compare to places like Gen Con and other locations, Nova and Adepticon. You know, things are relatively inexpensive compared to. We have a weekend pass where if you want to play both The narrative Skywalker event and the championship, you can get them both for $45. What is required is to play in any event, you have to purchase a Michigan GT badge.
Right, right. That's pretty standard, yeah.
Exactly. And the badge, it's $10.
Oh,
it's,
wow. That's, yeah.
The
that's
cheapest badge you will ever purchase for any any huge event like this. You know, we started really small back in 2013, it's grown every single year, but the badge entry has not increased. And I think that's really important. You know, we have the badge just to help cover costs.
Yeah. And so, you know, one thing I like, you know, because like you said, we want to get people out of from the Midwest, Illinois, Indiana, mm-hmm. Wisconsin. When the badge cost is lowered, little things like that, the money adds up. You say, hey, now compared to going to a different convention, I have $150, $200 extra. Hey, now I can, you know, get a hotel or Airbnb or, you know, and it just, there are some savings in there, which is great.
You know, the beautiful thing about the GT is, you know, we keep the badge cost low, but we also hold it at the Causeway Bay Hotel Convention Center. Now, when you think of a hotel convention center, they're either really big or really small.
Yep.
And this place is massive.
Awesome.
I was actually really impressed at how much room even I was allotted just last year. And last year, we were only going to max it out at about 32. We've increased space this year. The hotel is actually a really, really nice hotel located just outside Lansing in Okemos. The location information can be found on the website at michigangt.com. They do offer special rates for GT participants. What exactly those rates are, unfortunately, I'm not exactly quite sure. I think
that's all right. People are pretty good internet savvy. Yeah. They can find that out.
Exactly. So, they do offer special rates for people who are going to the event. So,
this is awesome, Derek. I'm excited for it. I'm gonna really see if I have some enough wife points to make it up there, and hopefully we can hang out and play some X-Wing.
Man, that would be fantastic. I'd love to have you guys up there. So,
all right, fantastic. So everybody, go to michigangt.com. You can find all the information there. Find the X-Wing link, and you'll see all the events there. It has all the times. You can pick up your badges there. It has the hotel information, anything you need. You can always also contact us, Gold Squadron Podcast, if you have any questions about it, and I can get those questions answered for you. Derek, so thank you so much for coming on and talking about the Michigan GT.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure, and I look forward to hearing more of your podcasts. I love subscribing to them, man.
Fantastic. And, you know, you since you're the guest, you get to do the outro call. Do you remember what our outro call is? Gold Squadron out?
Gold Squadron out, huh?
Yeah. So you got it. You got to say it real passionate, though.
You got it. Gold Squadron out.
Love it.